Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Hello and welcome to Beneath the Surface. Glad you could join us tonight, Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets, attempting to bring a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. And we do that by delving beneath the surface on an important topic related to the human condition. Tonight, we delve beneath the surface on the topic of race and racism. And we will do that with my guest and yours. There he is, Mr. John Tutoris.
Howdy doody. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here. How you doing, okay?
Good. I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that you're here. And good. I'm glad that you're glad that I'm here, that you're glad.
Well, you know what? I just have a little profundity for you. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yes.
Remember that.
I think that was from Remo Williams, but I don't think he originated it.
Okay, all right. But it's very important to know that.
What is that, Buckaroo Banzai?
If you want to give us an idea or a comment or what have you, or just go to my website at paulmorano.com. That's paulmorano.com with the U, just like the car Morano, all one word. And tonight we delve beneath the surface, as we already said, on race and racism. Now, John, this has been it's been called the original sin, if you will, quote unquote, of the United States of America. It's been a lot of obviously contentious politics revolving around this notion of racism. And I'd like to delve mostly into racism. But first, let's talk about race so that we can build a foundation for this discussion. Race, is there such a thing?
That depends on the context. So there's race in the generic sense as far as the human race. And there we could actually...
So race means species in that respect.
Yes.
So you could say the human race. Could you say the dog race? The elephant race. We usually use the word species, right?
That's correct.
All right. But with the human species, often we interchange that with the word race.
Yes, we do.
All right. Gotcha. So what about groups within this human species or this human race? Do you think, in your exploring of this topic, do you think it has any basis in reality that there are certain human races within the human race?
It certainly does from a subjective standpoint. That is for sure. And that is bolstered by actual real evidence. For example, culture is real. If I were to go to, the Polish working club, the Polish club, I'm sure they're going to display a fair amount of the Polish culture from the mother country. Same thing if I go to any other ethnic club here, in, you know, around where I live.
Which brings me to the word that you just used. Would you say that there is a significant or real or essential difference between race and ethnicity?
It's a good question, because both are often obscured or used synonymously for each other. You go to check off the box. Now, of course, it's optional because they don't want to offend anyone. But they ask, you know, what your race or what your ethnicity is. And then they'll have the typical boxes, you know, white or Caucasian, white but not Caucasian.
Yeah, there are a lot of boxes. Could you put your microphone near your mouth, more closer to your mouth?
And how is that?
Yeah, that's better.
Feeling it. I'm feeling it.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So then we can at least say that subjectively, we have categorized human beings by race and ethnicity and culture. All of these things come into play. Do they have any basis in biology, would you say?
To some degree, when we look at accidental features of people, and by accidental, I just mean aspects of us that are incidental to our nature.
All right, let's delve into that beneath the surface a little bit. The distinction between our essence and our accidents.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us the distinction there so that we can...
Sure. So the essence are the things that are substantially part of our nature. For example, that we have, that we're both spirit and matter. We have an actual real physical body. Yeah. We have an animating spirit. We have intellect, will. To go with that, we have emotions. The person either directly has them, or at least some potential has, two arms, two legs, a head, heart, two lungs. The typical things we associate with people.
So they are the essential qualities of a member of the human species.
Correct.
That is the norm or normal to an individual in that species.
Yes. Aristotle would sum it up and say we're a rational animal.
Which distinguishes us from all the other animals.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, you can do that with every race, right? Or with every species. You could say that, you know, a typical dog, you know, barks, maybe, you know, eats meat, loves bones, maybe chases cars if you're in a human neighborhood, so on and so forth. There are things that are essential to the nature of a dog that you could say are, you know, part of the substance of the dog, but accidental or incidental changes are different differences.
That's right.
Within dogs, you have different what do you call them? Different breeds of dog, right?
Different breeds of dogs, colors of fur, for example.
Would you say that breeds of dog is analogous to ethnicity or race in man?
Analogous to, but not a direct correlation.
All right. So then how would you make intelligible human variation, these accidental differences in human beings that aren't essential to what it means to be a human, like color of skin, texture of hair, etc.?
Well, that's really it. I mean, even Thomas Aquinas, one of his little pieces on being in essence, de essentia, noted that skin color itself is actually an accidental feature. And he was alive 800 years ago.
Right.
So he recognized that there's components that are necessary to make us human, but then there's these other features like the color and texture of our hair, whether we've got a full head of hair or someone like myself who's a bit balding, you know, whether you got a goatee. Follically challenged. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not even going to say follically disadvantaged, because a lot of people like a good bald head.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
That and a little bit of a pot belly. I've noticed more women find me attractive. Very strange. Very strange.
Indeed.
But very hopeful, too. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is interesting. Maybe we'll do a whole show on that. Why women find bald and pot belly attractive.
Yeah, balding.
Because,
yes.
But because yeah, I did read something recently in the internet saying that a dad body is more attractive to more women than an athlete's body, which is, you know, completely different than what most people had previously believed. But anyway, so these are all accidental changes. They're not essential to being human. They're just simply variations.
Yes.
And of course, within ethnicities and races, there are variations. You and I would be considered white guys, I guess, or Caucasians.
Yep.
And yet, you've got, you can still hear me, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, I think I hit something here. Yet, of course, you know, we look considerably different in many things. So we have human variation within races, and then we have human variation that distinguishes races. Yes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what we would classify. So, for example, you know, someone is. I mean, now we might, if we were to classify people, let's use like the checkmark boxes, right? Someone's Caucasian. Right. I mean, that could stand for anyone of more or less European and half of Russia, you know, that type of descent, where you're going. Whereas, you know, you might say someone, okay, I'm black, right? So you'd say, okay, that means I'm of African descent, but not necessarily full Africa, more sub-Saharan Africa, you know, and, but if,
yeah, and, so then, you know, the biologists say that we're 99, something like 99.9% similar in DNA, each one of us.
That's right.
And every human being.
Correct.
Of every race.
And we're biologically compatible. You could take a man and woman from any continent on the earth, and they could
be able to reproduce.
They'd be able to reproduce. Yeah.
Which means we're of the same species.
Yes.
But the fact that we're so genetically similar tells us that race doesn't seem to be all that important in a sense, because our DNA is so similar, we're almost virtually carbon copies of each other, and yet we can see with our five senses, especially with our eyes, distinguishing factors. I mean, everybody can see it intuitively. And traditionally, and I'm talking about maybe beginning the 17th century onwards, there was this categorization of basically Europeans, South Africans, or sub-Saharan Africans, and Asians. And these three classify, and maybe American Indians, but particularly those three classifications, white Europeans, Asians, and South Africans, were basically the three general races that were recognized for a while until relatively recently, where now we understand through DNA testing and so forth that it's a little more messy than that, at least underneath the skin. But at least intuitively, I think everybody recognizes at least those three general categories of humans. Yes?
Yeah, I would certainly recognize those. And then, like you alluded to with the American Indians or Native Americans, however you want to classify it, or even you could add into that group the people from the Middle East,
and sort of
that Arabic feel or that Arabic look.
Yeah, and they used to call it black, white, and yellow.
Yep.
And now, of course, that's become politically incorrect.
Yes.
But it was very simple for people. You know, it's color, black, white, yellow, and then the American Indians might have been red. So black, white, yellow, and red. And now it seems like today, the only politically correct term that from those that has remained politically correct to say is white.
Yes.
You can say there's a white guy on
right.
television. But even I guess you can say the term black, but usually the politically correct term today is African-American, even though that has its problems, because there are Haitian-Americans, there are Cuban-Americans, and they all look like African-Americans. So
right.
that's a little messy. And not only that, when you use a term like African-American, then just for the sake of consistency, logical consistency, you would have to call you and I European-Americans, and others across the Far East, Asian Americans. Usually we don't.
Right. And then that's, of course, that goes back to the part where you mentioned underneath the skin, it gets messy. I mean, that's messy enough just trying to trace us back immediately, just a few generations to where our ancestors came from, let alone the fact that probably, you know, hundreds and maybe thousands of years ago, you know, I'm sure I got a little African-American or African in me. I got whatever in me. I mean, my father, for example, both of his parents descended from the same town in Sicily. And Sicily was known as it's a well-known melting pot over the centuries
right.
In the Mediterranean. So I'm sure there's all sorts of folks that kind of came into the family. I have no idea, but it's certainly not without.
And that's why it's a little messy. You can't, there's no such thing as pure race. However, there are intuitive general categories that remain. And yes. we know it when we see it, that kind of thing.
Right. We take it in with our five senses. You know, for example, someone's skin color, the texture and color of their hair, maybe certain facial features, and we say, right. Okay, oh, they look very Jewish, oh, they look very, and they might use the generic Asian, you know, or he looks a little more Japanese, ah, no, he's Mongolian, no, he's really Chinese, but then they might, if they're really good, they'll actually differentiate between different spots, you know, in China, in the same way that people in Europe might say, ah, he looks a little more Eastern European, maybe he's from Romania, Hungary. I mean, I remember hearing the story of this one priest who is so good at pinpointing people's their ethnic origin by their profile,
by their look, by their voice, by their look,
profile.
Some people can do it by accent, but that's interesting.
Yeah, he would actually tell them to it was a little hobby of his, and he would tell them to stand to the side, and he would look at them on the profile, and then and I remember because it was Edward Sri, who's somewhat of a known Catholic apologist and theologian. And in his studies, the priest actually tried to do it on him. And he said, you, I find very confusing. And the reason why is because he had a mixed parentage. One was from, I think, India. And then the other was from some other place. And so, but ultimately, after pondering it, he actually still pinpointed it, if I'm not mistaken.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. How long do we have left in the segments? All right, great. We've got about 7 minutes left, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll have another half of Beneath the Surface. But tonight we are going beneath the surface on the question of race and racism. Paul Morano here with my guest, Mr. John Tudoris. Well, so let's get to this notion of equality, if you will. There is some truth to this notion that we are all equal, and yet it has been abused in our egalitarian obsessed culture. So let's try to recognize and understand both extremes here. All human beings are, and this is the equality part, equal in dignity and value as human beings, because as Christians, we understand that they're made in the image and likeness of God, Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. I'm not sure if there are any other ways to recognize or claim that all human beings are equal in dignity if you don't begin with that.
I think that's very important as an absolute starting point, but it's certainly not the only way. If I was an agnostic or even an atheist, I mean, there are a decent amount of people claim to be atheist or agnostic who would still have an appreciation of the human person.
Well, an appreciation of one, but what is it based on?
Right, I mean, well,
the equality of dignity.
Right, they don't realize.
I'm sorry, we're talking over each other, and I just want to get this thought out, and then I'll let you talk.
Sure.
It seems to me that if you don't recognize a spiritual soul, which is equal in dignity, reflecting and imaging God himself, if you don't recognize that, all you're left with is physiological creatures that have evolved over time, which, you know, and if you only have that as a basis, you can be easily led intellectually to thinking that some have evolved more or better than others at this point. They're more human or less, you know, less whatever than other peoples or races. And it's very easy to fall into that kind of thing, social Darwinism kind of thing. So how would you say somebody who doesn't recognize a spiritual soul is made in the image and likeness of God, making us all, every individual in the species, equal in dignity? If you don't recognize that, how do you recognize an equality in man?
Well, what they don't realize is that they're riding on the coattails of Christianity, of the Judeo-Christian culture.
I think that's the point.
The framework is still there. They get it. It's in the atmosphere still. It still lingers. Yeah. Even though I certainly wouldn't call us a Christian nation right now, certainly not a Jewish one, and many people explicitly reject those roots And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the latest that I heard was that, you know, the people claim to be agnostic or atheist are far higher now percentage wise than probably it's ever been as long as these stats have been compiled.
But the Declaration says that all men are created equal, which is rather, you know, a unique kind of thing to put in a Declaration of Independence, right. Especially if you know, if you remember the medieval and ancient worlds that we live in. So this is kind of relatively new to human history, this notion that every person is equal. You're not qualitatively different in dignity by virtue of your money, your status, or any of that.
Well, in the roots of, certainly for Christianity, all persons were seen to have equal dignity. And that's very explicit when you look at some of the gospel passages. For example, the Good Samaritan tale comes to mind. I mean, who is my neighbor? It didn't matter whether it was the rabbi or this or that person.
Jew, Gentile, didn't matter.
Didn't matter as long as they were doing what is right and good. And of course, that's indicative. The only reason why they're able to do that is because of that, the common aspect that makes us all human. Mm. And that's where we get our dignity from.
Okay. So again, if
it's also natural,
that spiritual soul that we recognize as having intellect and will, which comes out in things like symbolic language, the ability to grasp concepts, have thoughts, ideas, make sentences, make arguments. All of those things are uniquely human. And every race and ethnicity obviously is able to do that, which, again, those are the essential qualities of being human. You're saying that if you don't recognize that we're made in the image and likeness of God and that we have a spiritual soul that is able to survive bodily death, you can still recognize an equal dignity in all human beings. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's still a natural, aside from the fact that they're riding off the moral structure, the moral and ethical structure that you find with the Judeo-Christian essence, if you will, that still permeates the air. Yeah. There's still a large part that is still very, very natural. It's something that we can almost see and observe.
I think a big difference, though, is motive to treat people that way.
Oh, sure.
And if you're an atheist, then all you have are humanitarian or secular humanist motives to do this, which when our disordered desires and our selfishness kicks in, that's not all that much of a motive.
Right. And even the atheist, even the agnostic can still understand the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Very reasonable. Yeah.
Very reasonable, very rational. Even if you don't believe in a God, but you don't want to go ahead and steal their stuff because you wouldn't want them to steal your stuff. You don't want to insult them or commit violence against them because you wouldn't want them to do that. Everyone gets that.
Yeah. I think there's extra motive though, when you know that God is watching you and that your salvation is at stake.
Yes.
That definitely is, gives you a lot of good extra motivation. But anyway, do we need to take a break? I think we need to take a quick break right now. But you're listening to Beneath the Surface. Tonight on Beneath the Surface, we're delving on the topic of race and racism. John Tudor is my guest, Paul Morano. Go to paulmorano.com. And need to take a quick break. Be right back. Don't go anywhere. We are back, Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. John Tudoris, talking about our delving beneath the surface on the question of race and racism. Before the break, we had mentioned a lot of things, including, what does it mean to be a human being, a human person? And it is at least the Christian understanding that we are a composite of body and soul, or spirit and matter. The soul being the very form and principle of life of the body, and that the soul, the spiritual soul, is substantial in as much as it's not only a form, it survives bodily death. And we know this because it has functions that are able to grasp immaterial things and go beyond the physiological construct of our being, which other animals don't have. So in this spiritual dimension of the human person, we have intellect and will. We're able to reason and understand, and we're able to freely choose over and above our physiological instincts and desires and passions and so forth. Hence, we have a moral sense. All of these things are essential, as we mentioned last before the break, to what it means to be human, differentiating us from all the other beasts, or the other animals, that is, and of course all the other plants and inanimate objects in the universe that we know of. And hence, having knowledge and will, the ability to understand and to love, we image God himself, who is the infinite and eternal and perfect knowledge and love itself. And in that respect, all of us, as you know, theologically speaking, we can see that we are all of equal dignity. We are all, in that sense, the declaration is right that we're all born equal, in as much as we share that common human nature, that image of God within us. And yet there's a difference, John, between being and becoming, isn't there? On the one hand, we begin with equal dignity, and in a sense, we remain with equal dignity. But on the other hand, we have the free will to carve out our character, who we are, what we are, kind of thing. So in that sense, we're all very different, not only in talents and in gifts, but also in our character and in our personalities. Yes?
Yes, I would certainly agree. It's interesting that you mentioned that. Recently, I was watching an interview online with Jordan Peterson, and one of the things that he has trumpeted actually multiple times was that it's very important that there is an equality of, for example, as far as economics, an equality of opportunity, but there should not be an equality of outcome.
Right.
Meaning
that's a big difference.
Right. The equality of opportunity refers to you know, it is because we have this common dignity of our humanity. Therefore, because of that, the starting line, so to speak, is there. But the outcome is different.
So what we make of ourselves is different.
Right. And of course, there's other things that come into play too. For example, you know, he noted that people with a higher IQ generally tend to do better in certain areas versus those with a lower IQ. And that's just an example of where the outcome might be different. Obviously, social class, where you're born into, education opportunities, things of that nature can all lead to difference in outcome.
So we all have different gifts and talents, first and foremost.
Yes.
We are all given the essentials, and that's our being. But depending on how we freely choose to develop our gifts and talents that are given to us that are different than everyone else, we'll make will indicate where we go and what we become.
And not even just that, even those accidental features. So before the break, when we were talking about what substantially makes up a person, and then of course there's these incidental, we might call accidental features about us that might be different, such as the degree of intelligence that we might have. You know, it's not just skin color, hair color, things like your social class that you're born into. If I'm born into a family of billionaires, well, guess what? I'm probably going to be inheriting quite a bit of funds. That's going to drastically change the opportunities that I might have available through that. So now people might say, well, there you're just proving there's a difference in equality and opportunity. And really we're talking about opportunity, meaning that, for example, like a doctor, right? It's possible for anyone given sufficient means to study for it, but you need certain prerequisites in order to get there. Maybe enough funds for your education, enough intelligence to complete the coursework, the stomach to handle the type of work that you might be doing, things of that nature.
Would you say that that's unjust to have that kind of intergenerational social inequality and financial inequality?
It depends. It's not unjust to have extra money. It's not unjust to be materially wealthy. It is unjust to be uncharitable. Now, real charity doesn't mean that you go in and you steal other people's money and goods and just arbitrarily or give that out according to how someone else thinks they ought to be distributed.
Yeah.
Real charity has to do with me personally going to my neighbor and helping them when they need it, or being kind to them as they deserve by their human dignity.
All that is definitely true and very important morally. But would you say that socially, it seems like human beings, first of all, we're social and political animals, that it seems like before the American experiment and in the modern age, it was a given that all societies would be class systems. Maybe not as much as others like India, but, you know, their class is a reality in every tribe, in every nation, in every state.
Yes.
And even in the United States, that we try our hardest to have a classless system, we have a class system. It might be a little more fluid than other countries.
Sure.
With opportunity to change classes. But class doesn't seem to be unjust as an intergenerational reality within social structures. What do you think?
I don't think it's unjust.
It seems natural, doesn't it?
It does, and in part because it's analogous to the fact that we're not all so created equal as far as the accidental features that we may have.
So not just individuals, but family lines.
Oh, sure.
And opportunities that came. I mean, my great-great-great-great-grandfather might have worked hard, but every generation since then are rich. Now, this isn't me, by the way. I'm poor. I'm not rich. But I'm just giving that as an example. So that intergenerational lines are unequal in that respect. But we're not necessarily saying this is unjust.
No. Okay. No, it can actually be a very kind thing to want to make sure that your children and those that you leave behind are well taken care of.
Right. Okay. So where do we go from here? We have, we went through substance and accidents, what's essentially human. You want to delve into.
So that's a good lead into for what we see now as racism, right? Or at least what poses as racism.
What is racism
in the public sphere? So why don't we just start with the dictionary definition? So
why don't we?
I actually pulled up the Merriam-Webster, and they actually list three general definitions. First one, verbatim,
okay.
A belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. So,
okay,
for example,
time out. Yes. Let's unpack that a little bit. Because I think two very different things were said in that one sentence.
Okay.
The first half and the second half. So could you say the first half slower?
Sure.
Go ahead.
A belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities.
Keep going.
And that racial differences.
Okay, time out. Do you think race is a determinant of human traits and capacities? Perhaps not the primary one, but do you think it is a one?
It is.
Can you make generalities with regard to race and ethnicity?
You can make generalities. Yes, that's actually a necessary component to make intellectual judgments, not judgments of people's moral character and what their real true intentions are,
but rather free will.
But as judgment as it pertains to making intellectual progress and coming to understand and know something, generalities are actually very important. For example, before you were talking about what makes a dog a doggy, right? You know, and they have these general characteristics that are common to dogs. If I were to describe someone, for example, from the Gold Coast in Africa, that area around like the Congo, Ghana, and what have you, you could describe certain features that would be common amongst a lot of the people.
That are not common amongst other people.
Exactly.
Okay. Now these generalities very often are called stereotypes. And of course, in our culture, the term stereotype has a negative connotation. I'm not sure if it actually does in reality. What do you think?
So long as it's not used to negatively towards the dignity of that person as a human being and what they really deserve.
Yes. And I would also say that when you make a generality, by the way, we're always making generalities and stereotypes in our minds. We're always doing that. We can't stop that by virtue of just our minds categorizing things involuntarily with our intellect. But to make a generality or a stereotype, as long as you don't say every one of this group is X, this is where a lot of people who get offended by these things, they automatically go to. Not all group X does this. Just saying that this particular ethnic or racial group is more apt or more prone, experience tells us, to do or be X. Yes? Is there anything racist about saying something like that?
There's nothing wrong.
To be race conscious or aware, rather than, there's a difference between that and being racist. Yes?
I would completely agree. In fact, police departments do it all the time. They actually need to do it. The reason why is because there's only so many resources that they have. And so doing a certain amount of, or at least a fair amount of profiling in order to narrow things down, that's actually what, you know, good detective work does. You have to narrow down the field. I mean, if I was in any other line of business, right, and I only have so many resources to manage something, I have to find some ways to narrow down the field. And then, of course, as you get closer, you have to make those very particular judgments, right? You can't stay at the general. You have to go to the particular.
Right. But very often when you start there, a lot of people, and I understand it to a certain degree, a lot of people would say this is discriminatory. Because I'm a member of this group, I'll never be able to do this job because they weed me out immediately in their stereotyping and generalization before they get their top 10 prospects.
That can have, when it comes to jobs, you know, for example, like an office job, whether you're a lawyer or something like that. I mean, unless your specific job like that has certain ethnic sensitivities, which is very real. For example, if I'm in an area where there's a lot of Chinese Americans, and I don't know Cantonese, and that's the language that they're speaking, and I don't look very Cantonese, I don't look very Chinese, it's natural that if I'm at a bank and they want someone who can appeal to those people, and that's perfectly fine. I'm not offended by that. To me, I actually think that's good business.
All right, let's get real politically incorrect here. Would it be morally wrong to make the statement, in general, Asians are better at math?
What do the test scores say? That's all I got. Really, that's all I got to say. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that all Asians, of course.
No, of course not. We already went through that. Yeah.
Right. But if you're seeing that, generally speaking, they're trending higher in certain test scores.
Yes.
Now, granted, test scores themselves don't necessarily mean that they are necessarily better. Some people are poor test takers. Not all people that are good in math take tests. For example, you and I have a common friend, a regular guest on Beneath the Surface, Paul LeBlanc, who studies math.
Bob LeBlanc.
And that's a hobby of his.
Yeah, he loves it.
He loves math. He loves history. And you know what? He's in his mid-late 50s, and he's not going to be taking any tests. So he's not going to show up on the register.
Right. Something like 90% of players in the National Basketball Association are black, are of African descent.
Probably less so now.
No, I don't think so. I think it's more so. But anyway,
really?
we can Google that later.
Yeah.
And it's almost the same with football, and not as much with baseball, and certainly not hockey. Obviously, hockey was born in Canada. But is there anything to say about is it racist to make the claim that in general it seems like Africans are better athletes than other races?
You know, I would have to say it depends, because then you have to ask the question, what is sport? What is athletics? For example, golf. I mean, golf is clearly a sport.
It's kind of a game.
No, it still is a sport. The hand-eye coordination required for that.
All right.
I mean, granted, you're not necessarily running. You're not necessarily jumping. Yeah. But the hand-eye coordination for that, I mean, that and hitting a baseball are two of the hardest things to do in sport.
All right, so it depends on the sports.
Right.
Athletic sports, you know, running, jumping, all of these things that we think of when we think of athletes.
Well, what's the sport, though? For example, volleyball. It's not uncommon for volleyball players, the really good ones, to have 40-inch vertical leaps. You know what? Most volleyball players are, what, Caucasian or Asian? Mm. But you don't see them in the news. And that's because they don't get the press that basketball gets.
Well,
now, I'm not denying that there's certain not genetic features, right? I mean, it's there's enough evidence now to say that Jimmy the Greek, who got canned for noting this, observation that people of that West Africa area of, like Ghana, Congo, etc., have certain genetic dispositions, shall we say, that allow them to excel in sports that require them to run faster and do certain athletic endeavors.
I even heard that recently, I think it was by some liberal sources, that the reason why people of that section of Africa usually win the Boston Marathon.
That's Kenya.
The Kenya area is for that same reason. Because genetically they are predisposed to being more having better stamina when it comes to running, particularly long races.
Right.
So it's not. There's nothing racist to recognize some of these differences in the races.
Right.
Per se. Here's where we, at least traditionally in the past couple of 300-400 years, have gotten in trouble as a human race, and that is when we try to say that one race is more intelligent than the other, or one ethnicity is more intelligent than the other.
Agreed? You can certainly get into trouble with that. Now, that's not to say that certain test scores might trend towards one ethnic group more than another if you're checking off those boxes.
Right.
I mean, there's statistics, the math is the math, and that's it. It says one thing and nothing more and nothing less. But you're right, as far as the human potential, as far as intellect, that's certainly a different story. I mean, I've known plenty of people are black of African descent, super smart people, really good. But if you were to judge that just by someone who lived in the inner city, didn't have, came up in a poor family, maybe their father wasn't there, they had a broken home, they didn't have these opportunities. If they don't have that fertile ground, they may not develop.
And there's no question about it. There's a lot of cultural reasons that that people do different things and have different kinds of test scores. No question about that.
Right.
But you would say that potentially, by virtue of everybody receiving a spiritual soul, every human being, that potentially we have the same intellectual capacity? Would you say that? Or would you say intellectual capacity is more of one of those non-essential accidental things that that each individual has more of a capacity?
It would be the latter. I mean, to use an extreme example, obviously someone who's born with Down syndrome, their intellectual capacity is not going to be the same. And I just mentioned that because it's very easy for people to understand that. But then you get someone like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, obviously very smart guy who's very well versed in his field.
Well, if we had another Beneath the Surface, maybe we will, we can distinguish between being smart and being intelligent, having knowledge and having wisdom, very different.
Well, there's a famous, somewhat famous American philosopher, educator, Mortimer Adler, who in his later years actually made a distinction between having an education and being educated. And he said, even though here he was with his advanced degrees, teaching for decades, writing many books, and only in his very, very late years did he actually claim to be an educated person.
I mean, collecting knowledge or information is not necessarily, in my opinion, being an intelligent person. It might be being a knowledgeable person or having knowledge, but it doesn't necessarily mean having intelligence or wisdom, which I think is more inbred. But we only have a couple minutes left. Where would you like to go from here?
What I would like to do is bring in our good friend, Dr. Martin Luther King, whom I'm sure anyone listening or watching this program is very familiar with. Mm. And he, some people have had exposure, some not, but there's a really nice little good chunk from his letter from a Birmingham jail. It's okay. Written on April 16th of 1963.
Where do we have? 1 minute left? We have less than 2 minutes left. So okay. Could you do just a couple of a sentence or two?
Sure.
All right.
Let's see. Let's go. How does one determine whether a law is just or unjust? Just laws, man-made code that requires with the moral law or the law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law.
Right.
Put in the terms of St. Thomas Aquinas, an unjust law is a human law that is not rooted in eternal law, natural law. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. I repeat, any law that uplifts human personality is just.
All right, let's just take that really quickly. Any civil law that does not correspond with natural law, which means human rights, human goods, human dignity, human inclination, all those things that enable us to flourish. If a law contradicts that, then it's not really a law in essence. We should try to resist that law and try to change it.
Yes.
And so Martin Luther King was first of all, obviously he was a minister, so he was very in tune to Christian teaching. And he knew Augustine and Aquinas, so he understood the distinction between natural law and human dignity versus, you know, civil laws and how they need to intersect. Last question. Is President Trump a racist?
No, he is not. That's hogwash.
Okay, 30 seconds to tell me why you think so.
Because he hasn't necessarily offended the substance of the person. Or even really the accidental parts. I mean, it's one thing to say, for example, a city's dirty and that people are poor and things aren't done right.
And it's
rat infested. Doesn't mean that you're racist. They're rat infested.
Yeah.
Those are just objective features that he's talking about. And yeah, maybe there's hyperbole in there, but that doesn't mean he's racist.
People coming up from Mexico, some of them are drug dealers and killers or whatever he said when he ran
it's
for
true.
President.
Okay. That's true.
All right. So factual statements are not racist statements.
Factual statements are not racist statements. They are twisted to that in politics, unfortunately.
I think what's happening is a lot of these folks are sort of telling everyone else what's in his heart rather than just examining his words.
Exactly.
All right. Mr. John Tudorus, you're the man. Thank you for this interesting conversation on this controversial topic, but I think because people are so offended today in our offended kind of culture that we don't talk about this enough. I think the more we talk about this, the better off we are as a society. And last word I'll say on this topic is that what is missing in all of this problem that we have with race and racism is love.
Yes, the law of charity prevails.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
Nikki, John, you've been listening to Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano signing off with my guest, Mr. John Tudorus. Go to paulmorano.com. Tell me what you thought, and we will be back again for another show. Thank you very much later on. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.